and we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and with me in the studio as well is WGTD News Director Dave McGrath, and even more important than the two of us are the two others who are in the studio with us today, the two candidates for the 21st State Senate District. So we are happy to have in our studios Republican Van Wongard and Democrat Lori Hawkins. Lori Hawkins. I only said it twice because I said it incorrectly earlier while forward promoting the debate. We are glad to have both of them here for a candidates forum, a debate, if you will, and we will be asking them an array of questions related to various issues confronting the state. Just for the sake of you listening, we'll be kind of alternating back and forth in terms of who answers first and so on, but this otherwise is not a timed affair. We are offering brief opportunity for rebuttal if the candidates so choose, and we are hoping to be able to probe into a number of different important issues. Right off the bat, however, we want to just offer each of them a chance to say a little bit about themselves, where they are from, and also something about why they are in public life. In the case of Van Wongard, of course, it's a long career in politics, whereas for Lori Hawkins, this is a new venture. Let's begin, if we can, with Van Wongard. Tell our listeners a little bit about you, where you come from, and also what has led you into the political life that is a part of who you are.
Well, first of all, good morning, Greg and Dave and Lori. Good to be here with you. I guess this is about the direction of where we're going to go in the future. Voters need to have a confidence that the economic recovery in southeastern Wisconsin is going to continue. They need somebody who's going to stick to their word, work with everyone and anyone, somebody that's going to fight for them. And we need to remember where we are at in order to do that. So, like 8 years ago, jobs were leaving by the thousands. Our unemployment rate locally was over 10%. We were fighting Janesville and Beloit for first place for unemployment. Billions of dollars in tax increases, tax on jobs, cell phones, huge annual property tax increases, double-digit tuition increases. And despite all of these increases, we owed money to Minnesota, the doctor's fund, the road fund, and cut state support to schools. So I could go on with other things that were happening back in the previous administration, but when I was elected in 2010, we had those problems that were facing us. So the economy now is great, especially here in the 21st State Senate District. We have record low unemployment. We're below 4% in Racine, 3% statewide, about 2.8%, I guess. And, you know, whether it's Amazon, Kenall, Haribo or Foxconn, if you want a job in Racine or Kenosha County, you can pretty much pick the job. And on our state website, we have over 100,000 jobs that are available. So when you look at my record, I'm pretty proud of the record that I have. I haven't hidden my positions, and I've kept my promises. When I campaigned on jobs, right to work, prevailing wage reform, property tax relief, and Second Amendment rights, and I delivered on all of those things. So property taxes are lower than they were 4 years ago. We eliminated the state property tax, and our economy is booming. I've always said good ideas come from everywhere. I've worked with Democrats and independents. I've listened to people. I've partnered with Democrats on small bills, like eliminating the title transfer fee for widows and widowers. I worked with Senator Miller on that bill, to big bills like juvenile justice reform, where many of us worked on that. We had a really bipartisan 100% buy-in by all of our legislators. Every one of my bills has been or has had bipartisan support, and that's because I do my homework and I include people in the process. So I'm not afraid to fight. When we lost the casino, I was upset with the governor, and I let him know that, how disappointed I was. When they took away money from Racine to fix the interstate north-south, we did that. I had to fight for that. Took until now 6 years to get that money back that went to the zoo exchange. When CBD oil failed initially, Bob Wirch and I worked on that bill together and co-authored that bill. It took us two sessions to get that through, but we did. So I'm really proud of the things that we've done. I look at, again, my record of growing the economy, investing in schools, opportunities, targeting predators, human traffickers, keeping health care costs down. So that's where I'm coming from. I want to continue to do that. And my law enforcement career helps me to buy into seeing what is happening with that, with crime victims and crime and those types of issues also. So I'm excited to be here and excited to be running for this.
Glad to have you here, Mr. Wongard. Lori Hawkins, let's hear from you. Whatever you want to say about yourself and what draws you into your first political race.
Okay, thank you. First of all, thank you, Greg, for having me here today, and Dave. It's a wonderful way to start the week here, and thank you, Van, for being here. This is an exciting venture. It's an exciting time to be running for office, and I'm a distance runner, and when you're running a marathon, those miles at the end are what you're working toward. So this sprint to the end is kind of what all those miles were leading up to. So it's an exciting time. My background, I'm a daughter of a firefighter and a school teacher. My mom was a teacher, and then she also became a school social worker. So I grew up in a family where community service was first and foremost, and that's what I learned by watching my parents, that you serve your community, you're there for your fellow citizens. Working together is the best way to work. Lifelong Wisconsin resident, and same with my parents and my grandparents, so a long tradition of Wisconsinites. Career-wise, I began as a school teacher. I was a high school English teacher in Milwaukee at Mesmer High School, and then worked for a long time in the Milwaukee public schools, several of them, mainly middle schools, which a lot of people ask, why did you do that? But I love middle schoolers. They've got a lot going on, and they're fun. After doing that for quite a while, I got my master's in administration and decided to work with curriculum. So I was a curriculum coordinator at a couple of schools in the Milwaukee Public Schools. And my husband and I chose to move to Bristol to raise our family. That's why we're there. And once we moved there, I stayed home for a while with my children. I subbed at their school, so I got to stay within the public school arena, and my mom became ill, so I was helping to take care of her. So when it was time to go back to work, I opened a small business. It's a yoga studio, and the reason that I went into teaching yoga is because as a school teacher, I saw so many kids dealing with stress and anxiety, and teachers too. So one of the main things I do is bring techniques for mindfulness to schools. So that's career-wise. And then, you know, I've always volunteered and been active in the community. And some of the work I've done is with Congregations United to Serve Humanity, which is also called CUSH in Kenosha County, and Forward Kenosha and other organizations. And that's allowed me to work with different groups in our communities on important matters, including poverty, access to affordable health care, fair legislative maps, and voter education registration. So that's brought me into contact with many different people across the district. And what I heard over and over from them is that they just felt that they're not being heard by our current representatives. That they've told me time and again when I talk to them, knocking their doors now all over the district as well, that they just feel that the economy isn't working for them, so that's why I'm running. There are concerns of our citizens, which include, you know, knowing that even though the employment rate, as Van pointed out, is historically low, our working families are still struggling to make ends meet. Our public schools are underfunded, and that's something that's important to me. Coming from a public school background and having children in our area public schools, we need to recognize that our public schools are the hearts of our communities and make sure that they're able to provide for our children accordingly. And also, you know, we need to ensure, especially in rural underserved districts like where I live, that access to affordable and excellent health care is available for everybody. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to run for office. These are the ones that inspired me. I found more along the way, and I'm excited to represent the citizens of the 21st District in entirety, not just a few.
We appreciate you being here. We are glad both of you are here. We're going to delve now into some very specific issues, again, kind of popping back and forth. I think we're going to begin with Foxconn. I'll turn things over to WGTD News Director Dave McGrath. And the first question goes to Lori Hawkins.
Sure. So we do know where Van stands on Foxconn, and we'll let him expound on that just a little bit. But when we had John Layman in here recently for his assembly district debate, we asked him the question, had he been in the state legislature when this project came up, how would he have voted? Mm-hmm. And he said no, he would have voted against it. So I'm going to ask you the same question. Had you been in the state legislature, how would you have voted on the Foxconn incentive package?
I listened to that interview, actually, and John Lehman and I have talked a lot about this and other issues, and I have to honestly say that, you know, it'd be easy for me in hindsight, not having to have been in the rooms and made the hard decision to say how I would or wouldn't have voted. I feel that that's irrelevant. I don't know. I know that right now Foxconn is here, and it's a reality in our community. And what we need in Madison is somebody who's going to be a watchdog for Foxconn, you know, not a rubber stamp for big business. And there, it's a complicated matter, Foxconn. So what we need to do as legislators is to make sure that Foxconn, A, follows through on their promises of bringing jobs. It remains to be seen. There have been a lot of changes in the planning since the beginning. And I think one of the reasons is because, you know, the whole Foxconn commitment went through our state legislators so fast with record speed that we're now kind of still having trailing details coming through. And another thing we need to do is to make sure that Foxconn's going to, we got to hold them accountable to be good neighbors. You know, I talk to a lot of people on doors in Mount Pleasant. We've been spending a lot of time in Mount Pleasant. And people are concerned. You know, a lot of people are hopeful that this is going to be good for the community and bring the promised jobs and you know, make it good for them and their families. But there's also concerns about eminent domain and how their, you know, their property taxes are going to be affected and, you know, environmental concerns. So we just need to make sure that we are working together, listening to all the stakeholders, and making sure that that drives legislation as well as, you know, not just the promise of jobs and big business, but the needs of our constituents and the concerns that they're voicing.
So, Van, Lori raised some pretty intriguing points there about it is a done deal, and now we need a watchdog in the state legislature. She did indicate it kind of sailed through the legislature pretty quickly for a blockbuster package it was. And she and I think a lot of constituents want Foxconn to be held accountable to their promises. And she mentioned eminent domain. She mentioned the environment. So you're in the legislature and you voted for the package. So how do you address those concerns?
Well, first of all, I don't think it just, quote unquote, sailed through the legislature. There were a lot of very long sessions and hearings that did happen throughout the process. Business moves faster than we often understand. Unless you actually own a business and understand what you have to do with that business to make that business viable, it makes it a little more challenging to deal with that. But let's just talk about Foxconn. So yes, I voted for it, along with all of my colleagues from southeastern Wisconsin, from both sides of the aisle. Matter of fact, the Democrats representing Kenosha County, Peter Barca and Todd Onstad and Corey Mason and Bob Wirch all supported it. And they did that because it made sense, because it created jobs, and because those protections actually are built into the process. They don't get anything unless they perform. Foxconn has to build the buildings. They have to make the investment. They have to make the human capital investment in personnel and have those employees working here in the state of Wisconsin paying taxes before they get anything. And there's a third-party audit that audits that to make sure that those individuals or that Foxconn meets and each one of those things or exceeds it. And from what I've seen so far, they've exceeded what they've offered to do. So I'm very confident that they will do what they say they're doing. They're doing it right now. Matter of fact, they've exceeded that already by making investments around the state in the hundreds of millions of dollars. The innovative center that is coming in downtown Racine, their headquarters, which will be located in Milwaukee. We have Green Bay. They're having a facility. They have a research facility in Madison, and I think it's Wausau is the fifth, or Eau Claire, I think, is the fifth one. So they are investing in our state. This is now their community, but they have to perform, and we are there. There are things in place that will be sure that they do perform. As far as the environment, we have not eliminated any of the requirements that they have for the environment that they have to maintain. You don't think that they're going to be under a microscope because of all the attention that has been grabbed because of this? They are. And we have the EPA, we have the DNR, we have the Corps of Engineers, we have the county inspectors that are on site that are looking at how things are progressing, and they're making sure that they are doing what they're supposed to do. So I am very confident that that will happen. I was an investigator for 25 of my 30 years on the police department, and I can tell you I read people pretty good, but I also look at making sure that those individuals' feet are going to be held to the fire, and they will be. Right now we have our county executive from Kenosha County, Jim Cruiser, actually came from the Democrat side of the aisle, very good friend of mine, and our county exec in Racine County, Jonathan Delagrave, also a good friend from the other side of the aisle. These guys work together. They have almost daily calls to work together to make sure that things are occurring across the county lines. And this is one of the nifty things about this Foxconn, this whole process. This whole process actually, I think, was progressed because of the casino we didn't get. When we didn't get the casino, which I was very disappointed with, that would have been about 1,500 jobs, all of a sudden, all the small towns and villages and cities and counties that were here decided, gee whiz, you know, okay, we're not getting it, but we can work together on things. So we had that collaborative effort, and that's what we've seen so far with what's happened with Foxconn. This is actually one of the major reasons that Foxconn located here was because of the people and because of the collaboration, not just between the state and federal people that they had made contact with, but our local people, and because of our work ethic. So, yep, we've got a real low unemployment rate, and nobody can say that they can't get a job out there today.
So, Lori, now you've heard Van's assurances about what's in the Foxconn proposal, and they're going to hold their feet to the fire. You don't get the money until you provide the jobs and the buildings. Does that make you feel any different or any better when you hear talk like that?
I mean, I have heard that. I've listened. You know, I've done my research. I've listened to Van talk about it, and also, like he said, you know, I've talked to legislators on the Democrat side of the aisle who did vote for Foxconn, and you've got to have those conversations. You've got to be able to listen to all key players and sort out, you know, why decisions are made. So I hear that. And yes, I understand that there were long sessions, you know, in deciding about Foxconn, but I believe the whole thing happened in a month or so. And I am a business owner. I do own a small business. So I know that there has to be a lot of thought and a lot of contingencies planned for when you are making decisions on a business even as small as mine. Yes, the DNR was in a, you know, helped with this, but the DNR has become highly politicized recently, and they, you know, rules have been bent. I'm not in favor of bending the rules. I think that, you know, our DNR needs to go back to taking care of its natural resources instead of being more of the political entity that it's become. And as far as Foxconn, you know, not really getting anything until they produce, you know, that's true. Although we've set this precedence of this is the biggest corporate tax giveaway in U.S. history that we're doing here with Foxconn. And it's setting a dangerous precedence. I think that we were so excited about bringing Foxconn into the area that we did rush it. And that delayed return on our investment, we're not going to see in fulfillment until for over 20 years. And yeah, there's not this pot of billions of dollars that we're giving to Foxconn. I recognize that. Nobody's saying that. But that's a delay in return of our investment that could be going towards fixing our roads, funding our schools, helping with health care, helping with our student loan debt crisis. I feel like we've put a lot of eggs in one basket, and that makes me... again, feeling like I'm more determined to make sure that there's somebody, and I would like it to be me, to make sure that Foxconn is being held to their promises.
Can I just respond to that? If I can, Lori mentioned that this happened in a month. No, it was months. And this is one thing that you have to understand. When you're in the legislature, they don't just snap and this all of a sudden it becomes law. It's all the workup that you do with all the meetings. An example would be the issue we had with drainage ditches, that's water running everywhere. Thought that was going to be an easy piece of legislation. There was over 100 meetings with constituents and stakeholders, et cetera, over 3 years before we got to the point where we were ready to do the legislation. and it actually went in front of the legislature and was approved. So with this same type of situation where it's a process that was working over months and months. Now it's been over a year and a half, and yes, it's going faster, I think, than what a lot of things would, but it's because we have everybody collaborating and working together. As far as the DNR rules being bent, the only thing that was challenged, that was changed, was how we appeal a process, or how the process works if somebody wants to challenge a rule. Instead of going through 15 different things, it now goes directly to the Supreme Court so they can deal with it, because that's where it's going to go anyway. Because the other side, the opposition to this project, they want to stop it. They want to obstruct it. And I'm not saying that Lori does, but I'm saying the opposition to it does. And so by just going and settling it, it gets it settled right away. So this is not the biggest tax giveaway. That's how people call it. This is money we never would have had to begin with. This is not just a manufacturer we brought here. This is a technology that is coming to the globe, to the Northern Hemisphere, to Wisconsin, to Southeast Wisconsin, to the 21st State Senate District. And I'm really proud of that, that this is about jobs and opportunity, not for a few weeks, but for decades. We have bigger things in smaller thing in smaller portions that are happening here. We have Haribo. That's about a 300-acre campus they have. We have Aurora, another 300-acre campus, right next to each other. Okay, that's about 30% of what Foxconn is. We have Uline. We have Kennel. We have all of these companies locating here now that are expanding now because of this economic opportunity. And when we have these companies come in and we give them a refundable tax credit, it means they got to perform first. It's money we never would have had. Look at Illinois. People are fleeing Illinois because of what they have. So just that we're just giving it away, that is absolutely not accurate. I mean, this is something where we would hear people complaining about no jobs available. And now it's the other way around. We have to get people that want to work, you know, and not being able to afford to put money in your pocket so that you can bring money home. Amazon has raised the local pay scale to $15 an hour. And I know you can, at McDonald's, is offering $10 or $11 or $12 an hour to flip hamburgers. I think I got $1.15 when I flipped them way back when at Carroll's Drive-In. But, you know, everything is being lifted by the competitiveness of what's happening. So I see that this is going to be a real positive. I think that anybody who's not working right now, if you're not working right now, you don't want to. In most cases, you don't have the skill set. There's an addiction that needs to be dealt with that we've put in place that will help those people. We want those people to be into the network so that we can have people, because that's where we're short of right now. Mm-hmm.
All right. That's Foxconn. I'm sure it'll come back into the conversation before we're done here. We're talking to State Senator Van Wongard, the incumbent in the 21st State Senate District, and his Democratic opponent, Lori Hawkins. Gregory?
Let's talk about the state budget. And one ancillary matter that you're welcome to comment on as you kind of talk about this, feel free. What does the state budget overall look like right now as we're heading into 2019? And what are your concerns in terms of what the priorities are? And the ancillary matter regarding Foxconn is how much of our state budget should be devoted to money to create incentives for companies to move here. Some would say that's money very, very well spent. Others would say that's money that we could be spending on other things, or how much is appropriate to spend in those ways. So kind of a two-parter. What does the state budget overall look like to you? How would you shift the priorities if you could? And what about this matter of tax dollars going to draw companies here? Let's start with Van Wongard.
Okay, so when we're going to talk about tax dollars, and we're going to talk about where we're at, I think you got to go back to where we were at with the previous administration. We had double-digit increases for our property taxes. We had 118% increase over 10 years prior to our freeze of tuition for the technical colleges and the four-year colleges. During the Doyle administration, they put $10.7 billion into education. We've put $11.5 billion in education, almost over the same time, which is more, $3.6 billion deficit that we started with. And that's where I'm going to start my story is that when I came into office, we had a $3.6 billion deficit in the budget process, and we had to take care of that process, and that got us into Act 10 with what we were doing with making those adjustments and asking public employees to partner to bring that down so we could get things under control for the budget. Now we have a $500 million surplus. So $3.6 billion in the hole to a $500 million surplus, and our projections with the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, which is nonpartisan, they look at what the projections are for what those tax resources are going to be over that period of time. And at this point in time, it looks very favorable that those will go up. We are bleeding about 50,000 people in population over the last decade or so. And now we've stopped that with Foxconn and all these other ancillary companies relocating here. Now those opportunities aren't out on the East or West Coast or in Minneapolis or Chicago. They're right here, right in little Midwestern Wisconsin. So when you look at the budget process and look at the revenue resources that we have coming in, I think our budget looks very, very positive. I see that we've put money into the Healthcare Stabilization Fund, $200 million to reduce costs for premiums, for healthcare. We've put dollars into the road system. We just increased 25% to the communities to work on local roads, 30% increase for bridges, and actually funded those bridges that were in need of repair around the state to the point with the efficiencies that we got with some of our other projects that we could repair every bridge that was identified by local municipalities having issues. They have the funding for those repairs. So I think things are really working pretty well. And to hear somebody say that our roads are just crumbling everywhere, well, roads need to be repaired. The interstate, 60 years ago, is when they built it, all at the same time. And now it's at the end of its life. And that's why we're in this difficulty with this mega project with the interstate system. But our private roads to the towns and villages also need to be repaired. We can give those local municipalities the dollars, but they direct where they're going to be spent. That's not the state directing that. That's the local municipalities directing that. We have given increases in those local road aids so that they have more resources to do that. But I challenge just about anybody driving in Wisconsin here to go someplace where there's not an orange barrel, especially in southeastern Wisconsin. It drives you nuts when you're taking a shortcut and all of a sudden you got to take another alternate route because they're working on the road. So I think our budget is looking very, very well. We started the process with that. We'll get something down from the governor towards the end of the year, beginning of the year. He'll give us his idea of what the budget should be, and then we'll start working on it.
Hmm. Lori Hawkins.
Well, you know, budgets are all about priorities, and there's a lot of needs, and there's a lot of directions to go. To begin with, we need to ensure that our economy works for everyone, that there are not just an abundance of jobs and a low unemployment rate, but jobs that families can live on. I mean, I don't know, Van. I know you're a little older than I am, and when I was working my first job, I was making $2.10 an hour, so the minimum wage was a little bit higher then. I was baking groceries.
I won't let your inexperience, you know, color my thing either way.
Yes. I don't think it's fair for either of us to compare what we made way back when we were in high school to, you know, what McDonald's is paying now. But it's important to understand that even though our working families are – they're doing it right. They're working hard. They're following the rules, but they're still struggling. I've talked to people on the doors who have said just as much. I spoke with one man, I think it was in Bristol, who said that he works 3 part-time jobs instead of a full-time job because the part-time jobs that he found paid a higher salary combined than the one full-time job that he, you know, that he could work. His wife works 1 part-time job so that she could be home when the kids were home because the cost of childcare is so high. So I don't know if she's working while they're in school or working when they're sleeping or what. But combined, they have 4 part-time jobs. And none of those jobs offer employer-paid health care. So they're relying on Badger Care. And so when I'm thinking about budgets, I'm thinking about families like that who are doing things right and working hard to make ends meet. You know, our communities are built by these families. So we need to make sure that they're given the tools to thrive. And that means that we need a tax cut for working families. We're doing it for the super wealthy. We're doing it for businesses. Let's make sure that the people who are building our communities and raising the children in our communities are getting their fair share. We need to close that dark store loophole, plain and simple. That is a simple fix. It came as a unanimous decision, a bipartisan decision out of committee. And all that needs to be done is to close it. Right now in Pleasant Prairie and Burlington, that is the number one issue when I'm talking to people. They're worried about what their property tax bill is going to look like. It's going to be a surprise. And that's because the big box stores that, you know, as Van pointed out in the paper this past week, have all the bells and whistles and are bringing in, you know, good incomes, they should be paying more in property taxes than they are. Because of what they're not paying their fair share into, our homeowners and our small business owners are picking up the slack. And, you know, as caucus chair, my opponent had the opportunity to not only bring that bill to the floor to vote against it, but chose not to twice. So that is a huge error in the way our budget is going right now against working families. In addition, education. You know, we could talk about cuts to funding, bringing funding back, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, Van was talking about 2010. Show me anything that costs what it does today that it did in 2010. When you're not funding things adequately for years, then the bills get higher. And an excellent example of that is my daughter's high school. She goes to Westosia Central High School. And, you know, my husband and I moved to our community because of the excellence of schools. Her school's done a very good job, as has my son's school, to not cut staff. But this past year, Westosia Central cut 7 full-time people. 3 of them are STEM teachers. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about the importance of technology and all these technological, you know, advances and jobs coming into our communities, but yet we're down to the bare bones in our schools where it's coming down to cutting the teachers that we need, most of all to train people for these future careers that are coming. So we need to make sure that we are, you know, funding our public schools adequately. And as far as healthcare, if we would have accepted the Medicaid expansion of over $1 billion that the federal government offered us, we would be able to have adequately provided health care for so many more of our citizens and not worrying about how to make, you know, the prices low or with this, you know, health care restabilization plan. I know that as a mother, if my child wakes up in the middle of the night with an earache and a high fever and I can't bring it down, I'm taking that kid to the 24-hour walk-in whether I have insurance or not. And I'll worry about paying for it later. The problem with that is when that happens and, you know, people without who are, you know, feel cornered to go to the doctor without insurance or doing that, it becomes expensive for all of us to pay the bills. So healthy communities are more financially sound communities. And again, you know, the budget is all about priorities, and we need to make sure that the citizens of our communities are first and foremost when we're planning how to spend their tax dollars.
Can I respond to that? This covered a lot of area here, so yeah. Let me just do this kind of quickly. First of all, healthcare is the second largest expenditure in the state behind K-12 education. We have increased it every year. I stood against changes to senior care, prescription drug program for seniors. I kept family care. It's expanded to every county except for, I think, 2. I think now they're 100% to every county for family care. So seniors can, disabled people can stay in their homes. We went against the proposal to change IRIS, which helps developmentally disabled people. I was one of the many voices to stop that. So that's just the healthcare side of things, and we could talk about that probably for an hour on its own. The dark store loophole that everybody says, that's not an issue at the doors. People haven't got a clue what it even is for the most part anywhere in the district unless they've been prompted to it. And Senate Bill 292, which I was a co-author of, that dealt with dark stores, I have the bill in front of me right now. That is a bill that would have closed those, but there was difficulty getting consensus from everybody, all the stakeholders that were involved on both sides of the aisle to get the thing addressed, because they wanted to have not only the dark store issue addressed, but the Walgreens issue for triple net leases. And yes, I am the caucus chair, so I run the meetings in the caucus. So Lori understands that I'm not the majority leader. That's who makes the decision what's going to come up on the floor, what's going to be brought forward. I am one senator out of 33 senators, or 17 in our caucus. And so I do run those meetings, and I do have a pretty strong voice. And I did speak out with this because I authored the bill. So I get it. I know what's happening. So it is an issue that's being dealt with right now. There's a study committee that's actually going to bring back draft legislation in the next month or so. So hopefully we'll get that to that point. As far as economy for everyone, we are addressing it for everyone. Our taxes are lower than what they've been in decades. We have programs in the school system that started in Racine Unified over 5 years ago, the Racine Academies, to help young people so they could get their certifications to do things other than going to a four-year college, so being a welder or a CNC operator, things like that, automotive repair tech, those types of things. So that started, and that is integrated into the entire unified school system in Racine. I know they're working on something similar in Kenosha. They have it in Burlington and Union Grove, where they do these types of interactions also. They can get college certifications, and I was involved with that legislation. So they can receive early credits, so they can put a year out of their expensive college careers by doing it in high school and getting certifications. And we have this happening right now, and that is through Gateway and UW Parkside, which is a phenomenal educational campus. Debbie Ford, Chancellor at Parkside, and Brian Albrecht are just absolute cheerleaders and work together to resolve this, to make this opportunity available to all of our kids within the system. Boy, what else? You look at the Medicaid expansion taking that would be an absolute wrong decision. And it's about $180 million a year. It's a billion over the time span, the 7 or 8 years. But we found that in the 30 or so states that have taken this money, the government said, we'll cover it at 100%. Now they're covering it at 90 or 80 or 70%. And now the state has to pick that up after they've expanded this thing so wide that it is collapsing. And that is the problem. The Minnesota governor said it is one of the programs, the Obamacare program, is just absolutely devastating, and it is not affordable. So we have not taken those dollars. We have more people insured that have access to health care in the state of Wisconsin than ever before. And at a reduced rate, we've put money into the healthcare stabilization fund, $200 million, to reduce those costs. And we have a reinsurance program that protects people for pre-existing conditions. And this is the main thing I'm hearing at the door, is the pre-existing conditions issue. There's a federal law that says you can't just take that away. And in a discussion I had with our attorney general this past week, there's a state law that also makes that same protection that's on the books right now. And so if legislation occurred where we did repeal the Affordable Care Act, which is absolutely not affordable for most people, I would say that I would be one of the first ones to author that bill and to see that bill progress through the legislature. Because you don't just do your own house, you work through both houses. Mm. So we actually do parallel bills. That's how we get as many bills accomplished as we do. And I think I am one of the highest individuals for putting bills through the legislature. I've got quite a few bills that have gone through the process, and I'm proud that I think every bill that I've done has had bipartisan support of some sort. So I do work across the aisle, and I want to collaborate. I want to listen to people, and that's how we get things accomplished, by listening to people too. So,
Lori Hawkins.
Ooh, there's a lot in
go,
there.
Go, Lori.
All right. So a lot to cover there. Again, a good example of legislation with bipartisan support would have been to close the dark store loophole. And I got to circle back to that because, you know, what I've read shows that Vanya had the chance to bring it to the floor twice to vote against it and to close it, and you didn't. And the only entity that was in favor of keeping it open is not a bipartisan group. It's the WMC. It's a powerful, you know, lobbyist that pours a lot of money into the Republican Party, and they want it open, so it's open. As far as the Medicaid expansion costing us lots and lots of money, okay, so in the beginning it's covered at 100%, and the plan is that now it would have been covered at 93%, and then at 90%. So it doesn't just go from being covered, you know, here's the money, and now we're going to just strip it away. It's gradual. It's a weaning. And, you know, we are the only upper Midwest state that said no thank you to it. And you brought up our attorney general. He is in a lawsuit right now with the federal government at the expense of our taxpayer dollars, another lawsuit at the expense of our taxpayer dollars, to ensure that people with pre-existing conditions do not have to be covered under the insurance programs. So that's in direct conflict with being there and making sure that our most vulnerable citizens are covered. And as far as the alternate plans, those, you know, I've heard them referred to as junk plans. And that's because if you are not eligible for insurance because of a pre-existing condition, or, you know, you've got to look around. And these plans are expensive. They have a super high deductible, and they can kick you off for reasons such as pre-existing conditions. So there's a lot here that needs to be fixed. And these are all, I mean, one more that I want to touch on is, you know, availability for students to go in for higher education in our tech schools. Yep, Gateway is... We are really, and I'm not just trying to preach to the choir here because we're at Gateway, but it is a wonderful organization. We're very fortunate in our district to have accessibility to a great technical college with many satellite campuses, to, you know, a Division II public university and a great private college in Carthage. But the fact of the matter is that the crushing student loan debt that students face when they are, you know, looking for what's next after high school is a disincentive. I know I had lots and lots of student loan debt, and it took years and years to pay it off. And like students are seeing, young adults are seeing now, and like I was for many years, if you have all this debt hanging over you because of the career that you planned for yourself, you can't be a key player in our economy. So, you know, we're saddling students, young adults, with this debt as they're starting out their careers, and they're unable to feed into our economy and to stimulate it. And these are all issues that can be addressed if people will seriously work together to sort them out on the budget.
You're listening to a candidates forum on WGTD's morning show, and we have 4.5 minutes left. Dave McGrath, I'm going to turn it back to you. How do you want to spend those last 4.5 minutes, literally?
What intrigues me is what happens if Tony Evers becomes governor and the GOP maintains control of the Assembly and the Senate. Because, Van, you talked about working across the aisle with Bob Wirch and others. Do we end up in political stalemate for a couple of years?
Well, I think that's a possibility. But you have to remember, too, that what Tony's bringing to the table is what we had when in 2010, before that, what Governor Doyle had. We had 118% increase in UW tuitions. We've frozen that. So you talk about the debt load, that's where a lot of that came from, was from the previous administration, just continuing to jack prices up. And that is a no-starter. When they had $1.2 billion hidden in little accounts at the UW system, remember that? Mm-hmm. Okay, people forget about these things, you know, and those things drive the costs up when they've got all these little pockets of money that they're saving for their own little pet projects. Well, this is about making sure that our kids do have the ability to access and the ability to get in there, have good grant programs. We have a lot of those in place. The governor just announced one $5,000 debt reduction, I believe, for students that go through the process and agree to stay in the state and work here in the state for 5 years. I mean, these are ways that we're working to bring those costs down. I just think that, you know, if Tony gets in, that's not going to happen. I believe that our governor is going to be successful in his bid for this. Look at the economy. Look at what's been done. You may not agree with every policy, but you can't disagree with the result. And we have the result in this area of the state and the rest of the state.
And, Lori, I'll throw the last question to you. You're in a Republican district, tough to win.
Yeah.
But let's say you do win, and let's say Tony Evers wins, and let's say you're still in a minority. How do you make things work? How do you get out of gridlock? And what can you work with the Republicans on?
There's a lot of divisiveness in all levels of government and in our society. And I believe that it stems from people digging their heels in to their own corners and not reaching out toward each other. I'm going to go back to being a mom. I have two kids. They don't agree on things. I'm just throwing them out there right now. And you put them in a room and tell them they need to work things out. You've got to give a little to get a little. And that's what has to happen more. I feel that we came to a place where there was so many decisions to be made that people didn't always agree on. And instead of working together, we got more entrenched. And I've got to tell you that, if elected, I'm going to be somebody who thinks for myself and to make sure that I reach across. I'm running in this very district that could be considered very Republican, very conservative. That's where I live. I'm used to understanding that I'm not always going to agree with everybody on their views, but I'm willing to listen to them and I'm willing to work with them. And that's what I would bring to Madison. Republican gerrymandering is a serious blow to democracy in Wisconsin. And that is one of the things that if elected, I really would like to change. We need to make sure that a nonpartisan entity is in charge of redistricting, because nobody with skin in the game should be drawing their maps. I know that legislators should not be choosing their constituents. Constituents should be choosing their legislators. And this map was drawn specifically to benefit my opponent. If you look at how the boundary lines are drawn, it's very clear. And at the end of the day, if I'm elected and, living in Bristol, if I'm able to legislate for fair maps and I end up finding myself drawn right out of my district, I would find it a win.
Right. Can I just respond once real quick to that?
30 seconds.
I'll make it really quick.
30 seconds.
First of all, gridlock, 93% of the legislation we did this past session was bipartisan. That was passed. So we don't have this issue here. They have it in the federal at the federal level. And as far as this redistricting issue, the federal Supreme Court ruling said that you have to have one person, one vote, contiguous districts. You can't disenfranchise any group. And that's exactly what was done, one person, one vote, contiguous districts. The issue they had were two assembly districts that the court had when they looked at it, and they made adjustments to that, and the map was accepted. So there you go.
30 seconds.
I've got to say that our district is so interestingly drawn that it's received national attention. So I would definitely disagree with that. In addition, every voice should matter, and that should drive legislation.
On that note, we need to draw this to a close. We appreciate this being a thorough and a relatively civil conversation between our two opponents, Van Wongard and Lori Hawkins. We appreciate both of you being here today on The Morning Show. And Dave McGrath, News Director, thank you so much. Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2018, a unique shopping experience time and time again. That's what brings you back, jackandrea.com. Support also comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. More information at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, NPR News and classical music on your gateway to public radio at 9:01.